Welcome to episode 91 of the Microsoft Cloud IT Pro Podcast, recorded live from Microsoft Ignite 2018. This is a show about Office 365, Azure, and the IT Pro and end user side of life, where we discuss the topic or recent news related to Office 365 or Azure and how it relates to you as an IT Pro. Also, since Ignite has come and gone for another year, if you're looking for another conference to attend in Orlando, why not check out the Live 360 conference December 2 through 7. Scott and I will both be there speaking, and it's Orlando in December. What more could you ask for? Check out the link in the show notes for more information. In yet another interview that Scott did, he was busy at Ignite, he got a chance to converse with Sunny Coggin about Azure networking. Let's get started with the interview.
Scott Hoag, I'm at Microsoft Ignite with Sunny Coggin from Citrix, and we're going to talk a little bit about some of the fun products that came out this week at Ignite, both from Microsoft and from Citrix, to help customers in the networking space. So Ben and I have talked in the past about Azure Virtual WAN and some of that service offering, which it actually GA'd this week. And it's nice to see it finally out there and kicking around for customers, and thought it'd be really fun to talk to somebody from Citrix since they have one of the SD-WAN offerings that's available today. So before we get too deep into it, Sunny, why don't you just tell everybody about yourself real quick and kind of your role at Citrix, and we'll get started.
Sure. Thank you, first of all, Scott, for giving me this opportunity. We're really very delighted to have our story shared by your audience, so that was a great thing. My name is Sunny Coggin. I'm in product marketing for the Citrix networking division. That includes, my responsibility includes coverage for managed service provider as well as the Microsoft Azure cloud. So any joint solution with Microsoft, it falls on my lap.
Awesome.
Hi, I'm Steve Peschke, and I'm one of the founders at Office365Mon.com. I worked at Microsoft for over 18 years, and one of the most common questions I got is, how do I know what's going on with the health of my Office 365 tenant? When there's a problem with your tenant, you need to know what's going on before your users. We help you understand not only when your tenant goes down, but how well it's performing. When you do have a problem, where do you start looking? Is it your network? Is it your tenant? Is it some feature inside of Office 365? Our network analysis features can pinpoint performance issues and help you figure out where those bottlenecks are. Sign up for a free 90-day trial today at Office365Mon.com. Stay in the know and stay in control with Office365Mon.com.
So when it comes to something like virtual WAN, I think it kind of came out of left field a little bit and kind of, you know, preview when it came out publicly, and it had been kicking around, you know, in private previews as products do in their life cycle. Kind of one of the gaps in there was no connectivity for Express Route and being able to kind of come on to MPLS from that side. So Microsoft addressed some of that with Global Reach and some of the Express Route announcements they made this week. But as far as virtual WAN kind of coming into fruition, like, what are you seeing like a good uptick with customers there and adopting the service and really getting solid branch-to-branch connectivity on Microsoft's backbone?
Well, that is certainly the goal of virtual WAN, right? But you pick up a good starting point there. The comparison here is really to Express Route, because I want to make several comparisons to Express Route. As you know, Express Route is really targeted for data center interconnect for large offices that want to connect directly to Microsoft Cloud. So that means it carries a lot of premium. It's a fast network, but you're still beholden to the telco model of WAN provisioning, right? That means telco determine where the service is available, how much premium they want to charge you. Whereas with virtual WAN is a different market segment. It is targeted more for branch offices, points of sale solutions, really at a retail level. And I would like to coin virtual WAN actually as a BYON, or bring your own network. It really frees you up from that location-dependent mentality of WAN provisioning, but you can set up shop anywhere with the virtual WAN. Even if you want to be nomadic, you can do that too.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things customers miss sometimes. They look and they think, oh, I'm going to do Express Route. Well, who's your network service provider? Are you going with a level 2,
right,
level 3? Do you have your own ASN to bring? By the way, Microsoft does theirs a little bit differently. So now we've got to go to an NSP that already works with Microsoft. And by the way, ExpressRoute might cost you a little bit more because you're going to pay Microsoft for ExpressRoute because they have a circuit to the provider. You've still got to pay that network provider for their service and work with them and see where things come out. So it's not just the portability of the service. It's it is really bring your own network for virtual WAN in the sense that you're going to have more control over how it's deployed and where it goes and what that looks like. So I could absolutely see that being beneficial for retail, smaller branch, whatever it happened to be.
Yeah, and really, you know, when it comes to retail points of sales, they really want to have that freedom to set up shop anywhere they want, right? If they don't have direct internet access, for example, they want it over LTE. But how do you make LTE more deterministic, right? You require some pretty sophisticated engineering to do that. And you can have LTE, for example, from two different providers and actually run SD-WAN as an over-the-top service on top of that. So you improve resiliency and you actually have the ability for the application to detect which LTE path your application should take. So to me, that is very, very powerful.
Yeah.
It really enables customer freedom.
You want redundancy, path diversity, all those kinds of things within a solution. Like it just needs to be there, right? This is typically like in retail, we've got to connect our POS systems and have them upload transactions. And transactions don't go, we have a little bit of an issue.
One more thing to consider also with ExpressRoute, typically the customer actually have some kind of local IT resource. Whereas virtual WAN, there's the expectation is that you really the customer would want Microsoft to provide some of that capability, that the automation capability. It has to be built in because there's no local IT resource. And that's where Citrix, and this is part of my shameless tap on the back here, Citrix is actually one of the two approved vendors for virtual WAN. So we have built in very, very tight API integration with the Azure Cloud Orchestrator to make sure that anyone that has a Citrix on-prem, Citrix SD-WAN on-prem, when they connect to an Azure VWAN controller, they actually get to enter just the Azure credential in the form of the hubs, the routes, and the connectivity profiles, and all that actually get absorbed into our management system, our on-prem device, and setup is a snap. So just to compare, Scott, in the past, if you've installed a legacy branch router, right? Not only you rely on MPLS and leased line location, but typically, even if the router has got the ability to call home and do an automatic configuration download, right, it will still take you a good 3 hours to get everything set up right.
Yeah.
Whereas with virtual WAN, this is the automation part enables, typically it takes between 10 minutes to 15 minutes to set up a branch, a new branch site.
Yeah, it's actually, for those that haven't seen it, I'll make sure I put a link in the show notes to some of the webinars that have gone on and gone out. But it's super slick between defining, like you said, the hubs and the routes and everything on the Azure side. And effectively, let's provision the Azure service.
Yeah.
And then that device being able to interrogate an API and go ahead and pull the service and say, oh, look, here's a configuration. Pull this into my existing mesh and lay it on top of it. And it is just that quick.
And that is just for one branch. Now, think the for a network administrator that has to roll out, let's say, 50 branches, right? This benefit, this automation benefit, just compounds many times over, especially if those locations are in different geos. Now, instead of 3 hours times 50, you're talking about 15 minutes or 10 minutes times 50.
Yeah, no, I think that's the real beauty of it, being able to combine on-premises services with Microsoft's reach in the environment or from especially like a geo-regional workloads today. We have, you know, 54 regions with more coming online. Many regions have multiple data centers and multiple availability segments. And having access to all of those is one thing. And typically, you know, we talk about like virtual machines or let's deploy your PaaS service and go into one of those. But then we get into virtual WAN and you're having access not just to those existing regions, but also to all the other points of presence that exist.
That is true.
So now we've gone from 54 to Oh, I'm going to butcher the number. I think we're up to like 130 pops.
130, 150 pops.
Yeah,
I've seen the number fluctuate.
It's quite a few. So
I've been corrected once to say, I think it's now 150. Really? Okay. It's just growing too fast.
It keeps going up, but I think that's one of the things customers don't always realize. They might look at a service like Azure and say, well, it's just 54. Microsoft does a lot of other cloud services that aren't Azure, like Office 365 or Dynamics or Intune, which maybe hosted in similar regions, sometimes the same areas, sometimes they're different. And then there's also CDN services. Microsoft's had a CDN for a number of years.
The front door?
Yep, which is built-in front door, and we'll talk a little bit about that one. So having access not just to regions, but also POPs, and really when we're talking about SD-WAN, we're talking about being able to provision those hubs into the POPs,
right?
And those branches connecting to those points of presence. So you have a lot of flexibility there between where your devices land and how your traffic is routed into Microsoft's backbone.
That is correct. So that global reach is certainly thanks to Microsoft. As we become partnered with Microsoft, that means our product also has a much broader reach too.
It just scales right out
along with Microsoft. Customer can operate, you know, one day if they want to go international, they can. As long as there is a Microsoft POP that's available nearby, that's it. That they're on virtual WAN service. One thing I would like to add, though, when it comes to Citrix SD-WAN as the on-ramp to Azure Cloud, is that a customer does not need to spin up a SD-WAN instance on the Azure Cloud. So all they need is actually just an SD-WAN on-prem, right? And they can still reap the benefit of automation and that reduce time delay when deploying an SD-WAN on-site. Now, if they prefer a better service, for example, for automatic detection of brownout, especially when they're using a lot of voice application, conference application like GoToMeeting, stuff like that, we do recommend that they spin up an SD-WAN VPX instance in the Azure Cloud, because that just provides multiple benefits that we will cover later if you're interested.
Yeah, absolutely.
But there's definitely a good and better option. It doesn't have to be the Cadillac all the time.
Yeah, so effectively today, virtual WAN as a service is we would provision the service on the Microsoft side, and then like you mentioned, select, you know, a service provider, which there's a very limited number, was Citrix and only one other today that's out there publicly, and a few more coming. But really, it's kind of there's a couple places to go, and you know, you certainly have the expertise to deploy those and push those out. So when we kind of take it a step back, you mentioned front door or AFD. So AFD has been kicking around for a long time. I don't think people have realized what it's actually been used for within Microsoft land. But Azure Front Door is a service that's been in front of Microsoft Consumer Services for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been sitting in front of Bing and Xbox and a number of other consumer-facing services for a couple of years now in various forms. And just like everything else Microsoft has done, they've learned to productize it and offer it to customers. So where we've seen offerings like Service Fabric and you know, it powers Azure data centers. We always talk about the fabric and the controllers in the background. Same thing. Customers can go and build their own microservices. AFD is all about having access to It's really kind of hard to explain.
It's a cloud subsystem, infrastructure.
It is. It's kind of like a
accelerate content delivery.
It's an accelerator, but it's a CDN. It's geo load balancing and a little bit of like secret sauce that kind of Microsoft can only do because of their connectivity on their backbone. You know, it's kind of amazing that really the only limitation today is speed of light with the amount of fiber they have. Laid down all over the place.
They call it wire speed, I think.
Yeah.
And anything can be delivered at wire speed, whether it's a static content or application can be delivered at wire speed. So the Azure Cloud and the Office 365 Cloud, there's this sub-cloud infrastructure called the front door. And the front door is just meant to accelerate things. And that's... Anybody that want to play nice with the Office 365 and Azure, it has to work with them too.
Yes. I think it's really good. And customers, certainly, if you are doing geo-distributed services at scale, particularly geo-distributed microservices, it's kind of a no-brainer to at least take a look at it. and say, hey, is this something that we can extend into the operations and life cycle of our applications?
Definitely, definitely.
When it comes to email, Outlook and Office 365 are fantastic. But sometimes there are things you'd like to do that aren't implemented. Sperry Software creates Outlook add-ins and Office 365 services that fill in these gaps. For instance, there are Outlook add-ins to automatically print emails and/or attachments, save emails to PDF, send out recurring emails, or how about a warning when you're going to do a reply to all instead of a normal reply? Find these and many more email productivity solutions. Get started today by visiting www.sperrysoftware.com/cloudit.
I want to bring this a little bit to the topic of discussion on hybrid cloud adoption, or people that are, you know, customers that are thinking of migrating to the hybrid cloud. There is a little bit of a hesitation in the market. You know, many different customers, they have different perception when it comes to hybrid cloud, how fast they want to adopt it. And some customers, they're even bounded by pretty a strict guideline on how data should be handled. Some of our newer offering to complement Virtual WAN is actually meant to address that.
Yeah, no, hybrid's always an interesting one. So it's not just customer hesitation. Sometimes it's just customer lack of education.
Lack of education.
About what's going on there, especially when it comes to Microsoft. I tend to hear a lot, and coming from Office 365 and kind of SharePoint land originally, it was always hybrid was, well, you have to bring your data to us at Microsoft, and then once your data is with us, we're going to call that hybrid. And that's not really the case today. It's where's the right place for data to reside? So when we talk about Azure, there's nothing to stop customers from an enterprise control plane or looking at concepts like virtual data centers. And it really, it's not anything special. It's not like I'm going to Microsoft. It's I've selected another data center provider or another compute provider. So my prem, your prem, their prem. It's just somebody else's premises.
Yeah.
I can absolutely lock it down. I can have my
SD-WAN
connectivity. Yep. I can go ahead and do site-to-site connectivity, or I can do express route. I can privatize everything.
You can use virtual WAN too if you need up to 1 gig.
Yeah, if I'm not going to use public PaaS services, it's okay. Like, it is, you don't get to see the rack.
But you're
still provisioning compute, and it's exactly the same as you do it today. So let's talk a little bit about what you have going on that side. So you mentioned ADC. So typically I think of ADC in the form of like application gateways and like layer 7 application controls, application delivery controllers, and being able to do kind of monitoring, segmentation, and routing. So what's going on there?
So what's going on here? We announced our joint solution SD-WAN for virtual WAN last July. That's when VWAN was in still technical preview, right? At this event, it becomes GA, so we expect the floodgate to open and the uptake to increase. That was one of your earlier questions, kind of uptake it has. We expect that to increase quite a bit by GA time, just considering that retail is now booming all around the world. But this new Citrix ADC on Azure DNS private zones, as they call it. I know it's kind of a mouthful name. It actually piggybacks on the popularity of Azure DNS. You know, that's a very hugely popular service. And again, piggyback on the Microsoft global reach, right? The 130 POPs and 54 data centers. But what it really encouraged our customer is to look at the migration to a hybrid cloud strategy. You actually control how far and how fast you want to do it. That's the whole point. And you can even start migrating some of your core networking functionality, such as DNS and internet domain control, into Azure if you want to.
Yep.
Okay? Now, as you gain more competency and more confidence by over time, then you can start migrating more and more stuff to Azure. A typical use case here usually are customers that are bounded by strict company guideline where high-value data needs to reside in a private data center. It cannot be in a public cloud. However, everything else, you can start kicking the tires of Azure. See what it's like, how fast it's going, you know, and how seamlessly it integrate with your existing operation. So what it does, if a customer subscribes to the Azure DNS, and then they extend that to Azure DNS private zones, they actually now get to spread their intranet domain and traffic management across multiple geos and even to their private data centers. So again, this is about creating a concept of one large virtual data center spanning across the globe.
Yeah, Azure DNS as an offering is pretty interesting. And I think it's been confusing from a customer side because quite often, one of the very first things we approach in cloud with customers is IaaS. And we talk about, hey, let's bring your VMs up, and here's a VNet. And VNets have their own DNS because there's Azure DNS built into VNets with, you know, effectively VNet resolution. And then there's bring your own DNS.
Yeah.
Let's have your own infrastructure come in, your private infrastructure, maybe, or maybe we lift a form of that up to the cloud. Quite often, most organizations have a public DNS presence as well for you know, their public presence with their registrars and everything on that side. So Azure DNS is the DNS PaaS service, and it brings all of that together in a single service with both public and private zones. So you can continue to do registration with existing registrars. Like, Microsoft's not going to be able to sell you every TLD, and you might not want to purchase things from them. Like, that's okay. But they can provide you with a name resolution system as a service gated by an SLA.
Without long hauling the packet.
Yes, yeah. and they added some new support in there this week as well. So one of the things they announced for Azure DNS, and it's been a little bit of a gap, is the ability to bring over aliases as a part of the service. So for public IPs or anything that's associated with a public IP in the DNS service, and there was another resource as well, I think it was traffic manager profiles. So basically anything that consumes one of those two types of resources, the backends are dynamic or can be dynamic or weighted out. The thing with that is the front ends can also be dynamic. You might be looking at cost-saving measures in the cloud and say, I don't want to pay for a static IP, but I was forced into it because the service didn't support this. So now with aliases, what that lets customers do is continue to have dynamic IPs. They can bind those IPs into any workload that supports public IPs, whether it's a Azure load balancer, like an external load balancer, or a application gateway, and go ahead and bring those resources up. And should the IP change, if that resource is destroyed or spun down,
you get to keep your vanity domain.
You get to keep your vanity domain. And not just your vanity domain, but the routing stays in place as well.
Exactly.
So you don't have the blip or the outage that would normally be associated with tearing that resource down and then reinstantiating it in the cloud. So it's nice to hear about vendor integrations that are building on top of that service. And it's got a bunch of interesting things going on. I wish more people knew about Azure DNS. You can do split brain DNS in there, like you said,
public and private. You can do split horizon DNS too, you know. Still, for the intranet part, we handle all of that. So if there is a workload that needs to be offloaded to the private data center because your VM and your backend VM is busy, we can do that too. We'll let you know which one is the most optimal way to offload it. So, that capability is provided by our bot.
Yep. So that product lets you effectively wait on the edge of the customer. So they're gated by the edge. If they're outbound from on-prem and they have that ADC set up, they can be routed on-prem for performance reasons or or to the cloud or like you said, closest kind of point of presence or whatever that happens to be.
So we see that we see that synergy between our SD-WAN and ADC are getting closer and closer. And, you know, we're certainly very proud to continue on that path. You know, we're accelerating our feature velocity when it comes to a joint cloud solution with Microsoft.
Awesome. Anything else you think we should touch on?
Anything else? Yeah, that's interesting. Now, this is the part where I'm going to let the cat out of the bag a little bit. but I think what I would like to share is this. Microsoft is pushing on the concept of network connectivity principle. Have you heard about that?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So network connectivity principle is basically...
So I've got it, but my audience probably doesn't.
Ah, yes. Okay. So let's start with the business case justification first.
Yep.
Why Microsoft would like to do that. So Microsoft basically has a goal of covering two-thirds of the world GDP. And those locations must support a latency of within 25 milliseconds. Now, that's tight, 25 milliseconds is tight. If you know voice has got 200 milliseconds before it drops off, right?
Yep. And depending on some parts of the world, like if you're looking at 2/3 GDP, you're still in some not very built out places.
That's true. Yes. That's exactly right. That's quite a bit of world coverage, I would say.
I mean, I remember when I lived in Australia in Sydney, I paid an exorbitant amount of money for a DSL line in the middle of Sydney because they were still rolling out DSL.
Okay.
And it was like, fiber? No, we don't have that. Cable? Maybe if you move way over there.
Yeah, so... They certainly have built a lot of sophistication because when you look at the Office 365 applications, right, some are latency sensitive, such as Skype for Business, right, that needs to send a constant bitrate. Some, they're not latency sensitive at all, but when they send something, it tend to be a big file, database file, PowerPoint. So, the spectrum is very broad. And then there's some that there's one that sits in the middle at Exchange that it's very chatty. It doesn't send big data, but it's very chatty and constantly need to be serviced, right? So Microsoft has built this sophisticated system with Office 365, front door service. Now, how do they ensure that the last mile can handle that, right? Because they can be as sophisticated as they want, but if the last mile is choking, like what you give example about
it, it's always one of the things they've had going on. And, Microsoft's been talking about it, and I think partners have for years, about the challenge of troubleshooting and doing network optimization. And we really, at the end of the day, don't spend any time optimizing the Microsoft side. Occasionally we
do.
If we take a look at ExpressRoute, there's customers that publish thousands and thousands of BGP routes, and they do tons of they need to, and they do things that they're off the beaten path for smaller customers. But for the majority of us, if you're sitting in Alaska or you're in a remote part of South America, getting up to a service that's hosted here in the continental United States hopping across to somewhere in Europe,
it's not optimal. You don't want to do that. So this is where Citrix come into the picture again, So we are working on it, API integration, UI integration, to make sure that we comply with that network connectivity principles that I originally brought up, to make sure that we meet that Microsoft requirement. Now that requires quite a bit of change on our SD-WAN, in that we have to know which one is the URL that respond the fastest. We get it directly from a front door system, and then we DNS resolve it within our box. We know the location, how to target it.
It's not just doing that. It's doing it within the amount of time that's allocated to you and how much compute it takes to figure that out.
It takes some compute power within our SD-WAN. But at the end of the day, we see that as a way to ensure that the end user, Scott, really get the best experience. It really doesn't matter whether this is on IaaS cloud like the Azure or on a SaaS cloud like Office 365. In this next phase, they actually can share policy. We know how to handle the packet correctly to make sure that it gets to the destination in the fastest way possible. So we do it all. If it's Microsoft Office cloud, if it's Microsoft cloud, we want to be known as the trusted partner for any customers who is thinking about migrating to a Microsoft cloud.
Mover is a cloud migration company that specializes in moving your company's files from file servers or cloud storage like Box, Dropbox, and Google into Office 365. Their patented technology makes Mover the fastest OneDrive file migrator in the world. Moving dozens of terabytes of data a day is a breeze. Use Mover's free, industry-leading migration guides or ask for a managed migration and they'll take the lead. With Mover, all your data is secure and intact. Running completely behind the scenes, you don't lose time, money, or hair while you transfer. Scan, plan, migrate, report. Migrations that don't suck with Mover. Visit mover.io for more info.
One of the really nice things about that is there's quite often, like you said, misconceptions about Microsoft's network and that last mile. And there's a number of customers that hear about offerings like ExpressRoute for Office 365. It's a gated program at the end of the day. You still need to go to Microsoft to get approval to do an ExpressRoute for Office 365.
That's right.
Because it's very easy to do path looping and some other strange things to your network, all because you wanted to QoS Skype, you know, for business on premises when you didn't really need to because it was something else. So that gives customers an opportunity to have acceleration and performance within their segments where they should have that control for BYON, like you said, like,
right.
Let me control what I control and let Microsoft continue to maintain their SLAs on their side for delivery and interconnectivity between their services.
You brought up an excellent point. You know, I think everybody, including our audience, know that computing and networking is coming together very, very fast, right? It was not too long ago that voice and data were two separate channels. But now, you know, everything runs on IP. The next thing is computing and networking is coming together very fast, and we want to make sure that you have less knobs to tweak when it comes to networking. Let the application decide how to control the network instead of the network want to control itself, and then the application has to adjust accordingly or require a manual intercept to do that. So we just want the application to control it, and then the network just do it automagically. And that's where we see this coming together of application and networking, and that's where we can help.
Yeah, no, and I think the great thing about that is it's not just tangible for the people who need to maintain the technology, but that's really a user-facing feature, and it makes their jobs easier at the end of the day. There's less frustration with, like you said, my file took longer to download.
Or, I just want to use it.
Yeah, no, I just need it to work. Like they don't need to know, you know, what layer 4 and layer 7 are,
exactly.
And TCP versus UDP and all those kinds of things. And to a certain degree, that also lets practitioners step back a little bit too and focus a little bit more on application delivery and be a little bit more end user focused.
Exactly.
It's easy to be mired in the technology and forget that people need to use this stuff at the end of the day.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I can't agree more.
All right. Very cool. I very much appreciate the time today.
Likewise. Thank you very much, Scott. Look forward to the next one. If you have one, give me a buzz.
Excellent. Thanks.
If you enjoyed the podcast, go leave us a 5-star rating in iTunes. It helps to get the word out so more IT pros can learn about Office 365 and Azure. If you have any questions you want us to address on the show or feedback about the show, feel free to reach out via our website, Twitter, or Facebook. Thanks again for listening and have a great day.